Best reading, book one. Agents of Bestie. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in love. The Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all who have prayed. All your works praise you, Lord. Your faithful people exploding. Return up the glory of your kingdom and speak of your might, so that all people may know of your mighty acts, glorious splendor of your kingdom. Your kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and your dominion endures in all generations. Love is trustworthy in all you want, faithful in all you do. After the 2 days, he left for Galilee. Now Jesus himself had splintered out with honor and the room. When he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had seen all that he had done in Jesus. Passover festival, but they also have me. Once more, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official on the hill. And this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee. He went to him and said, "Was close to death. Unless few people see signs and wonders, they will never believe." Royal officials said, "Sir, come down and see me." "Go," Jesus replied, "and you will live." The man took Jesus at his word. While he was still on the way, servants met him to believe that he was living, and he inquired after the time. "But after me." Then the father realized that this was his death. And he lived, but he and his whole household lived. This was the second time.
Oh, Father, we pray. It's a kind of dozy time of the day, and yet we know your words. Where we're able to engage and focus has the power to transform us. So just give us that gift of concentration, that gift of engagement, that we might be able to do your work in our lives as we hear from you and the word. Okay, so my John's Gospel, we're on page 1067, and we're in the page. Look at this passage. And John's Gospel is written by John. That's probably unsurprising, even if this is your first time at church. You probably think about that. And John is a disciple of Jesus, a fisherman, you might remember. And then he meets Jesus, and he discovers that in putting his trust in Jesus, was steep. Something that has never existed. A whole new kind of life. As we put it in the Gospels, Jesus puts it, life to the full. The kind of life that feels like a totally new start and that then goes on through to eternity. That's John, and he is desperate for us to receive that too. And that's why he's writing his Gospel. So right at the end of John, okay, he's got tired fingers by this stage. He's written a lot. And he says this in chapter 20, verse 30-31. "Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book." Right, so it could have been even longer if I had the time. But Galatians. And then he says this, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Right? So the same life that John the disciple encountered when he trusted in Jesus, when he believed in him, that's on offer for everyone. It's not actually John who's the special one, it's Jesus, and Jesus is available, whoever you are. So John is saying, but there's one thing that's required. I just need to know Jesus, and then to believe in him. So for the gospel, John is doing these two things. First of all, he's helping us to meet Jesus, get to know him better. And then secondly, he's helping us to understand what it means to believe in him. Because that's a funny old word, isn't it? Like, since the Enlightenment, we've tended to think of believing as like an abstract intellectual process, like a sentence. Like, maybe is it just believing that Jesus exists, for example? Is that what it means by believing in Jesus? And something different. Bringing all this stuff, we begin to see a little bit more what it actually means. What does that actually mean? Gospels, what does it mean in our lives as well? And we're going to see in this account that there is a kind of a belief that isn't really belief at all. Apparent but kind of surface level non-belief. I'm going to see that contrasted to the kind of genuine belief that leads to this life that John is so passionate about. So we're going to just work through this account relatively briskly but methodically, and then as we work through, we're going to see these kind of beliefs, different kinds of belief. And I hope that will help us as we figure out what it means for us to start trusting in Jesus and then to go on every day of our lives, living a life of faith, belief, trust in him. Right, so it starts in verse 43. After 2 days, Jesus leaves for Galilee. That's his home town. He's going up north. You might remember he's been in Samaria before. And then it says, verse 44, now Jesus himself had pointed out that a prophet has no honor in his own country. Bit of a kind of warning, isn't it? You remember, he's been down in Samaria, which is like very much not his own country. Do you remember how he was received? They were like effusively positive about him, really well received. But now he's going back home, and John is just indicating, you know, there's going to be some rejection of Jesus. The reception is going to be mixed. If the prophet is generally not honored in his own country. In verse 45, Jesus arrives in Galilee, and it says the Galileans welcomed him. So far, so good. And then it says they had seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, but they also had been there. So their welcome of Jesus seems to be on the basis of what they have seen him do. And that's significant. But they seem to be interested in the signs, the miracles, the spectacle, but maybe not so interested in Jesus himself and not that he's unworthy. We're going to come back to that thought as we go through. So that's the background. Now, it says, verse 46, once more he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned water into wine, and there was a certain royal official whose son lay ill in Capernaum. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. I mean, you can really sympathize. I personally really sympathize with that. He's desperate. But just desperate for it to be okay. And so this guy, he's a royal official, by the way. Herod is probably his boss's boss or something. And he's used to operating in the corridors of power, but here's a situation where no amount of power is out. He can't sort out the situation with his sick son. So what does he do? Well, he's heard of Jesus, And so he takes a 25-mile journey. That's the distance from Capernaum and Cana. And by the way, it's uphill as well. It's a long journey. And he arrives there and he begs him, come, come and help. And then we get the surprise in verse 48. And it is surprising, maybe even jarring, as we read, Jesus said, unless you people see signs and wonders, you will never believe. Now, he's talking to everyone there. He's not just singling out the royal official. But he's talking to this group of people from his hometown, who we've already had indications are maybe more interested in the show than in. And he's saying exactly that. Unless you see signs and wonders, you will never believe. So he's saying, look, there's a kind of so-called belief that isn't really belief at all. Okay? It's just spectacle, signs and the wonders. And you might sum it up as, I'll believe if. I'll believe if there's an amazing miracle. We need to go home and talk to everyone. Okay, I'll believe if you take that really big problem in my life away. Okay, I'll believe if you give me what I really want, that job, that career, that place in the friendship group that I really want to be a part of, or that pay rise, or whatever it might be. I'll believe if you show me a good time. Right, there is that kind of attitude about, isn't there? Have you come across it? I'll believe if you give me that spectacular bit of individual evidence that I really want. And Jesus says, that's not really trusting God. That's putting him in the dock. That's basically saying, I'm on the throne. I set the conditions. I set the terms. And God, thank you very much. If you would just do my bidding, then you'll be lucky enough to have me on. Who's really God in that situation? Can you see? So Jesus calls out this kind of belief. I'll believe it. And he says that's not really belief at all. We'll come back to that. So the question now is that what's going on for this royal official? He pleads with Jesus to come and heal his son. Is it that kind of superficial, I want to see an amazing thing kind of belief? Or is it more? Well, let's read on. Verse 49. The royal official continues, come down before my child dies. Go, Jesus replied. Your son will live. Now, this is the key moment. What's he going to do? You see, twice this royal official has asked very specifically that Jesus should come. Says, Jesus, please come with me. That's the only hope we have. Please come. And Jesus isn't going to come. What he said instead, go, your son will live. Just put yourself in the shoes of this royal official. You've had a 5-mile walk uphill. Get to Jesus. Your son is desperate. Everything in you desperately wants Jesus to come. What are you going to do? Are you going to say, Jesus, please come. Please just come. We can see what he does. In verse 50, the man took Jesus. Words and depart. That's true faith. That's the kind of believing in Jesus that John wants to commend to us. You see, he has to surrender what he wanted. He so wanted Jesus. What he actually has to do is walk away with nothing but Jesus' words. He has no assurance, no mobile phones. He has no idea how his son is doing.
just has to walk away and trust the word that Jesus spoke. And he does it. If this is not, I'll trust if, I'll believe if, setting out his own conditions, this is, I'll trust because. I'll trust because Jesus spoken this word. I know the time. There's a world difference between I'll believe if and I'll believe because. And do you know, I just love how the story finishes. So verse 51, while he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. When he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, yesterday at 1 in the afternoon. Then the father realized that this was the exact time which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So he and his whole household believed. Okay, so that initial kind of moment of faith, right, he walked around with nothing apart from Jesus. It now kind of comes into full flower as he sees that Jesus he trusted is utterly trustworthy. I mean, what did he learn about Jesus that day? I think he learned that the spoken word of Jesus has the power to bring life. 3 times that phrase is repeated. Your son is living, right? Your son is living. The word of Jesus, the spoken word of Jesus, bring life. And all you have to do is trust him. Or is it the lovely phrase in the passage? Take Jesus at his word. Right, just take him at his word. And this is, in a sense, a picture of Jesus' entire mission, right? So we started with the last few words in John's Gospel. These seem to ring that you may believe, and by believing, you may have life. Okay, so the life that Jesus gives to this official son's little boy, that's the kind of thing Jesus wants to do for all of us, right? All of us are dying. All of us are spiritually dead. And all of us are in trouble because of our sin. We're facing the judgments of God that we totally deserve. We can do nothing to avoid. But then Jesus comes and he says, I love you. And he steps to a cross. He dies on the cross and he says, I will pay the price for all of your wrongdoing. And he says, you know, I'm going to rise again. And just as he said, that's exactly what happened. He rose again. He said, my life, I can pour it into you. So this abundance of life in your heart right now, you can have it through my spirit. That will go on forever. And here's the thing. Jesus has spoken all these words. He is, according to John, the word become flesh. And he speaks words to us. And it's precious. We believe it. I'll believe if. Oh, it's all very well, Jesus, that you've done all these amazing things, that it's all written here in the Bible for me to see, that I can see the evidence all around me and the lives of people transformed by you. All very well, but I'll believe if you do this thing in my life, or if you take away that problem, or if you reveal yourself to me in this very specific me kind of a way. I'll believe if. Or we say, Jesus, I'll believe. I believe because I can see that Jesus, my God, I can see that every word I speak, I don't need anything else. I'm not I believe it, I believe because. There's a world of difference between I believe it and I believe. Just dig into those a little bit. Maybe apply them a bit more to after the story. I'll believe if. Who's at the center in that exchange? Think about it. I'll believe if you do this for me, you do that for me, the other for me, me. See, I believe it ultimately puts me at the center and requires God, the Almighty, to do exactly what I want. And here's a question. How reliable do you think you are as a judge of your deepest needs? How reliable do you think your demands of God actually are? Do you think they're actually going to be good for you, these demands you might have? Do you think maybe you deserve it? You see, the flaw with I believe if, it basically assumes that you know better than God, that maybe you have more authority than God, or you want to call the shots in a way that makes you, well, that's I believe if my conditions, my perceived needs, Jesus is a means to an end of achieving what I want. Yeah, in other words, it's just another manifestation of our innate inclination to reject God's rule and set ourselves up in his place. That's why Jesus says, you people, you won't believe unless you see signs and wonders. But you see how different it is when you say, I believe. Because who's at the center then? I believe because Jesus. In other words, it takes you out of it. Jesus at the center. Say, because of Jesus, I will respond to him in faith, in trust, in dependence. Right, this kind of faith, by the way, it's not blind or irrational. Actually, quite the reverse. God has given us everything we need in Jesus to respond with this faith. In that sense, it's totally rational. The difference isn't between rational or irrational. The difference is between who's setting the terms, me or God. I believe because is a response ultimately to Jesus. If faith is simply to trust Jesus and the powerful word he speaks, and we can. That's the kind of faith that John in this gospel. Just an illustration, just to help kind of clarify the point. A confession. I'm turning 40 in about 2 months. So lots of my friends growing up and so on, they're also turning 40. And so all of the kind of party invitations I've been coming in. We got one a couple of weeks ago from my friend, who's another Sam. And it's a lovely invitation. Sam and me love to come party in January at some point. Now, imagine if I responded by saying, Issan, I'll come if you arrange for me to pick up and drops off. I'll come if there's only 80s music and a chocolate fountain and you sort out all of our chocolate. Now, I think Sam would be in his, it would be justified in saying, how much do you really want to come to this party? And hang on, whose party is this? Because you see, by saying, I'll come if, and then setting all of your conditions, you're kind of taking the party over. You're saying, actually, it's really all about me. Better response, Sam, I will come because we're my friends. You've invited me. And I didn't, this is a free gift. I just get to come to the party and you've invited me. That's the right response, isn't it? It's exactly the same with Jesus. He has come and spoken a word of loving invitation. Just come, trust me, believe in me, and I'm going to take you into this wonderful life. And then we say, well, I'll come. You see, that, of course, the right response is to say, I'll come. Now, this is the heart of what it means to become a Christian. Right, some of us here may not quite be Christians yet, and we're kind of weighing it all up, and we are well and truly in our believe if mode. Right, and we've got all of our conditions. Just think about what you're implying about God, if that's where you're at the moment. Maybe a better approach to working out if you should be a Christian is to go down the our believe because line, right? Put Jesus at the center, Spend your time getting to know him, and then you will discover pretty quickly whether you want to trust in him, and whether you feel like he's a reliable person to give your life to, whether his word is a word you want to build your life.
Yeah, I mean, we've got these lovely little books here, Meeting Jesus.
Pick one of these up. It's a great starting point.
But if you're working out whether to become a Christian,
remember, I'll believe because, and that means you've got to get to know Jesus. You want to work out what it means to actually trust in Jesus. But you know, this whole if or because dynamic that we've seen in the past, it's also true of the whole Christian life. Because once you become a Christian, it's so easy to slip back into the I'll trust you, Jesus, if mode. Jesus speaks such a clear word to us in his word, the Bible. His spirit brings us alive, come alive, and we're open. And here's the question: are we going to take Jesus at his word, like this true faith? Or as we go through our Christian lives, are we more in the kind of I'll trust you if? Right, so some works examples. Jesus has spoken a clear word about so many things, about money, possessions, generosity. And it's quite radical. And it'd be very easy for us to say, oh, Jesus, well, I will trust you if I get that payroll. Then I'll be generous. I'll trust you if the bank balance gets above a certain amount, and then that will enable me to restart our conditions. Jesus has said, and I know it's a good word. It will be life-giving, as every word of Jesus is.
Well, what about forgiveness?
Jesus said so many times that it's there on the cross. And weighs us down. We barely give ourselves permission to take it off. And Jesus says, don't you think my word is, will you take me at my words? And we can say, oh, well, I'll believe you if. And then we set ourselves a whole way to condition. Just believe my word. For marriage and sex and relationships, Jesus speaks a very clear and countercultural word about these things. And it's so easy for us to say, well, I'll trust you with relationships if you give me this perfect relationship. Or if you sort out credibility in my life. Or if, you know, life just gets a little bit easier in our culture. You know, and it doesn't feel so countercultural to follow Jesus. But Jesus has spoken a clear word. He says real faith is to take him at his word and say, I believe because that's come. And we could apply this to every single area of Christian life. It's so easy. I believe you. He invites us to a much better way. To surrender control like the man who so wanted Jesus to come. He has surrendered and instead trust you. What is it that you are being called to surrender? What are the ifs? I'll trust you if you need to narrate your wants. If Jesus actually, I'm going to trust you because of you. You're enough and your word to me. Verse 53 says, then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So be in this whole household. Jesus will never let him down. John says, right at the top of it, that we also might. But Jesus is the Son of God. He loves us. That in believing in him, we might have. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the word of Jesus. Help us to trust, to really trust.
And if you are
sufficient, it's when we slip into in our own condition.
They believe that us. You know our needs better than we
the lives that
ask it for Jesus.